Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. This week, we're talking national issues that affect us locally. We've got tariffs, we've got offshore drilling ramifications, we've got a potential government shutdown coming, and we got the flu. Well, we don't, but you probably do. Keep washing your hands, South Carolina, because we got plenty to talk about today on South Carolina Lead. Interested yet? I hope so. It is, after all, why we named this podcast The South Carolina Lead, spelled L-E-D-E, harkening back to the old-school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. Now, we hope you listen to all four sections of our podcast that we've exclusively curated for you from local, organic, sustainably harvested news sources. Take the South Carolina Lead wherever you go, like into the bathroom as you wash your hands for the 35th time today, or as you run over the Ravenel Bridge just to be seen. We see you. And now, Quorum Call. Quorum Call is a term to see if a majority is present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, I gotta give you some nuclear news, especially since the House passed two bills last week and plans to pass a third this week. The House passed a bill that would strengthen the Office of Regulatory Staff by giving the utility watchdog the power to subpoena documents. This bill would also create a new consumer advocate position. Now, House lawmakers also passed a proposal to get rid of the current Public Utilities Review Committee. That state board sets your electric rates. Those bills now are over in the Senate. Number two, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was recently taken over by Trump's budget director and former U.S. Rep. Mick Mulvaney, dropped their investigation into the payday lender World Acceptance Corporation's marketing and lending practices. Now, it's also worth noting that while the investigation has ended, the law firm Motley Rice settled a federal fraud suit with the company for $16 million. Number three, the state reports that the South Carolina Election Commission is asking the legislature to set aside $20 million in the upcoming budget to replace the aging voting system. The state bought its current voting system in 2004, and it has about 13,000 voting machines that have an expected lifespan of 15 years. And Ivanka Trump was in Greenville last Friday with South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. The president's daughter, who serves as a senior advisor in her father's White House, worked closely with Scott during tax reform negotiations to double the child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000. Scott was a major player in those tax reform negotiations, and that, my friends, is what you call a segue into our lead this week, which we've totes buried. Sorry, not sorry. To temper your nuclear fatigue, we've decided to focus on national issues that are on their own separate spin cycle. You may remember the government shut down the other day, forcing lawmakers in Washington to negotiate a three-week stopgap measure, thanks in part to senators using a talking stick so they could compromise on a deal to keep the government funded. Well, we have our own talking stick, and it's called a microphone, and we've invited the Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove to chat with us about the national issues that involve our elected leaders. We want to get you up to speed now on what recently imposed tariffs by the Trump administration mean to South Carolina businesses, especially the new Samsung appliance plant in Newberry, how the budding solar industry in the state may get nipped by these tariffs, and whether Governor McMaster's pull with the president is running out. We're also awaiting a decision on whether South Carolina's coastal waters will be exempted from oil and gas exploration and drilling, like the Interior Department has promised the state of Florida. All of this in just a year since former Governor Nikki Haley left to become the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Now, we have a lot of news to cover that you might have already heard about, but we have an expert just for you to get some insight on these topics. Joining us is Jamie Lovegrove, who keeps an eye on these national issues for the Post and Courier, while also running around the Statehouse with me and other reporters. Sorry, Andy Shane. Jamie, welcome to the lead.
Thanks for having me, Gavin.
So let's start off right now with some shutdown talk. Obviously, the government could possibly shut down again by next Thursday if lawmakers don't come to a spending agreement. What have Senators Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott been saying on the matter? I know we saw Tim Scott the other day up in Greenville, and he was sounding pretty optimistic. What's the vibe?
He did sound pretty optimistic. He said, you know, that he thinks that we can reach some kind of compromise on border security and immigration. I'd say Senator Scott is closer to a lot of his Republican colleagues on immigration, whereas Senator Graham has always been very moderate on that issue and has always been trying to strike a deal. Remember, he was in the Gang of Eight several years ago that came out with a compromise plan that ended up being panned and ended up imperiling Marco Rubio's presidential bid. But he's been very intricately involved in this again. Senator Scott actually joked because Lindsey Graham was in the front row. He said, you know, Senator Graham's raring to jump up and answer this question when someone asked him about it. You know, Senator Graham yesterday, Sunday, on This Week ABC said, we're not going to have a shutdown. He put his foot in the sand and said, you know, this is not going to happen again. He said the good thing about the last government shutdown, the one good thing that came from that mess, is that it really focused everyone on immigration and made sure that people are at the negotiating table or willing to, you know, come and try to strike a deal. But the clock is running down. You know, there does not seem that they have really changed the equation from the way it was before. So unless they can find a way to break new ground here, we're certainly still on track towards that until something else changes.
And what, you know, what makes our senators, Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham, kind of these, I don't want to say power brokers because they're not exactly power brokers, but they do wield a lot of power up there. What gives them that pull, in your opinion, in these national major national issues?
Senator Scott is overwhelmingly popular. I think that, the mandate that he has from voters is part of what gives him influence on Capitol Hill. I'd say he's one of the most popular Republican politicians in the entire South. And so certainly his work on tax reform was very important there. And of course, you know, Senator Scott also holds the role of being the only African-American Republican senator, and that he's played an important role in trying to diversify the party and to share perspectives that may not ordinarily get talked about among Republicans on Capitol Hill. So he's played a valuable role there. Senator Graham, this is what he lives for. I mean, he is such a political animal. He loves to negotiate. He loves to get involved in these types of matters. Whenever there is some kind of spotlight somewhere on Capitol Hill, you know that Senator Graham is on his way there if he's not taking it there in the first place. And he's very passionate about immigration. You know, I've been with Senator Graham when he has met with groups of Dreamers. He has a very personal connection to the issue. He feels strongly about it. So even though there are now a lot of power brokers on that issue now, I think everyone in the Senate seems to be wanting to get a piece of the immigration negotiations. Senator Graham's history is always going to make sure that, you know, he is intricately involved in that process.
And it's interesting, we can talk a little bit about Senator Graham's relationship with President Trump. Obviously, there's a lot of backstory there, too. But most recently, I know you were supposed to be on our podcast the other week, but you had to go chase down Senator Graham. He was speaking at a Martin Luther King Day event locally here in Columbia. And that was just right after the news kind of came out, that conversation that happened in the Oval Office with Trump using a derogatory term, talking about some countries in the world. We're not allowed to use the term. We're not going to rehash it. But, I mean, that might have seemed like forever ago. It was just about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Tell me, Jamie, what your thoughts were about, I mean, he didn't really say much afterwards when you tracked him down.
Mm-hmm.
Is that maybe out of loyalty to Trump, or is that maybe out of a way to kind of just get past something that we all recognize kind of is becoming more and more of a thing and try not to comment about it? Or is that a loyalty to Trump, like I said?
I think it was mostly a matter of not wanting to ruin a relationship that he has spent a lot of energy cultivating over the last several months. Of course, we've seen Senator Graham out on the golf course with President Trump several times. He's been golfing with the president more times than any other member of the Senate. And just a few months ago, you know, people forget, but it was only in August that President Trump tweeted that Lindsey Graham is a publicity-seeking liar. They were not close before this. And it really kind of started with that healthcare push that Senator Graham orchestrated with Senator Cassidy. That really got him and the president working on the same page. The president, similarly to Senator Graham, really didn't want to give up on healthcare the way that Senator McConnell did. So, you know, they started to form a bond there, and they've been a lot closer ever since. And Senator Graham was clearly taken aback by that conversation in the White House. in the Oval Office, but he also didn't want to let it create an unnecessary divide between him and the president right at this critical moment where he's trying to win the president over for, you know, his view of immigration. The president has been really all over the map on this issue. He, you know, one day will say that he feels compassion for the Dreamers, and the next day he'll be outlining a much more hardline approach the likes of Senators Cotton and Perdue are pushing for. So if you do not have that pull, if you're not in the room, you can risk the president going all the way to the other side. So Senator Graham really wants to make sure that he is maintaining his spot at the table. And I think that was why he tried very carefully there.
And you could at moments maybe probably argue that that trickles down to South Carolina in some respects, too, where we look at obviously Governor Henry McMaster, who endorsed Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential campaign primaries, became the first elected statewide official to do that, kind of got some weight with Trump there early on and yielded some benefits. He got to speak at the national convention. You know, Governor Nikki Haley all of a sudden became a pick and got out of the way in a sense so he could become governor. You know, you can read into that what you want. But I mean, that did set up a little bit more for McMaster to get some traction on the 2018 gubernatorial bid. And now he's been working with Trump to try and get him to move on some of these issues. We're talking about offshore drilling, these tariffs. He went to bat to try and make sure that these tariffs didn't come out the other week. What's the dichotomy there? I mean, do we know what it's like behind the scenes at all with Trump being at the center of this, and then you have Lindsey and Henry kind of fighting for Trump's attention, or are they two different animals and they're all somewhat complementary of each other?
I think they're complementary for the most part. I mean, Senator Graham and Governor McMaster are very close. Senator Graham's already endorsed Governor McMaster in the 2018 race, where Senator Scott has kind of stayed out of it a little bit. The way the governor has talked about this is to say, look, my influence gets me in the room. You know, it gets me to be able to talk to the president and folks in his administration. Doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to win the argument. You know, just being able to present the argument is one thing. The tariff situation was negative for just about everyone in the South Carolina delegation. Certainly, Senator Graham, Senator Scott, and Governor McMaster were all very opposed to that.
And can you talk about those tariffs really quick, Jimmy?
Yeah. So there were two, both of them heavily affect the South Carolina economy. One of them is on solar panels. There was a 30% tariff there, and then there was a 50% tariff phasing out over several years on large residential washing machines, which Samsung, a Korean manufacturer, just opened a brand new production facility in Newberry. Mm-hmm. And the solar industry is growing in South Carolina. So both of these two issues were ones that the governor testified before the International Trade Commission in Washington. Congressman Norman was very involved. His Newberry's in his district. And both of them, the president ended up deciding that he was going to impose the tariff. That was a big setback for the state. And certainly it kind of contradicted the message from a lot of these South Carolina Republicans that tax reform meant that South Carolina is now open for business, or the U.S. is now open for business. You know, they turned around after saying that and said, well, this decision is really devastating for the economy. So it was a big setback, and it does certainly show that there are limitations to the influence that the South Carolina delegation has over some of the more hawkish trade advisors in the White House.
And I know we're still talking about those tariffs, and how does that shake at the tariffs and the coastal drilling? Mm-hmm. I mean, like we said, that Florida got exempted from this new ability for oil and gas companies to explore coastal waters. That's still a long ways away. It still has to go through a lot of hoops, a lot of public hearings and regulatory processes. But Florida's already got an exemption from the Department of Interior from having any of that happening off their coast. And Governor McMaster is pushing for the same. But if that doesn't happen anytime soon, if these tariffs are here, I mean, does this start to shake out and affect the 2018 gubernatorial race in any way?
I think it could. Catherine Templeton, while she is a big supporter of President Trump, she can spin this in such a way that makes it sound like, Governor McMaster, who has talked about his relationship with Trump as a major benefit to his campaign, a reason why voters should send him back to the governor's mansion, why that's a hollow talking point, especially if the offshore drilling decision comes down adverse to the way that he would like it to go. Something that I think is very interesting to consider here is Florida is a swing state. you look back at the tariff decision, the company that brought the large residential washing machine complaint was a company in Ohio, which is a swing state. Part of the problem may be that the president doesn't see South Carolina as a state that's at risk. And so he doesn't have to worry about upsetting voters there. He knows that this is a strongly Republican state that is going to support him pretty much no matter what. And so that may be part of the calculus that's playing in here.
So fend for yourselves, essentially, while we cover the other guys.
Exactly. He's already endorsed Governor McMaster. I think that's just about all that the governor could hope for when it comes to the race. He can't expect the president to really be weighing his election when he makes decisions about his trade policies and his energy policies moving forward.
And just kind of wrapping up here, what's the reaction been to these tariffs? I know we talked with Senator Scott last week. He had some comments about this. The governor has made mention of it. Is anyone happy about these tariffs coming out here?
I wouldn't say anyone is happy. I would say that there is a there's a range of dissatisfaction.
Don't spin it.
There are folks who view this as apocalyptic, you know, as there are folks talking about thousands, tens of thousands of jobs leaving the U.S. because of this situation. A lot of folks that I talked to said it's bad, but it's not that bad. That particularly in South Carolina, at the state legislature, there's a bill from James Smith, who is a Democrat running for governor, that would raise a limit on residential solar. The solar industry has really put a lot of stock into that bill. The utilities are somewhat opposed to it because they argue that it forces non-solar customers to subsidize the solar customers. So there could be a bit of a pitch battle there. But, you know, basically the solar advocates say, if you can give us some help at the state level, we can continue to thrive in South Carolina. If you don't, then on top of the tariffs, we're going to be in big trouble. When they passed a landmark bill in 2014 that really opened solar to South Carolina, there were 700 solar jobs in South Carolina. Now there's around 3,000. So this is a really growing industry. And I think there are a lot of lawmakers that are sympathetic to that type of argument. Of course, this is a state and a legislature that is sympathetic to pro-business, you know, chamber type ideals. And that's going to be something that is going to resonate with them.
And I want to end here really quickly. I know we just had the State of the State last week. The president's going to have his State of the Union address tomorrow. Going to the governor's State of the State was his first. You were there covering it, listening. One thing that stood out to me and probably stood out to you, too, is just how he maybe lightly mentioned offshore drilling and kind of really framed it in the context of our natural resources and just how important the coast is in terms of tourism and just its, you know, its natural beauty. Was that his kind of soft approach to maybe dinging the Trump administration or just at least telling people that, hey, we're not for this? I mean, he's obviously very strongly against offshore drilling, but was that his way of saying we can't do anything about this, even to some of his fellow Republicans who are, you know, a little bit more apt to pushing for that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think that he's really trying to thread a needle there of making his position clear without upsetting the Trump administration. He doesn't want to go directly at them. It's interesting, you know, we go back to the tariff decision. He really kind of blamed that on the International Trade Commission rather than blaming it on the president, even though it was ultimately the president's decision at the end of the day. So he, on a whole host of issues, he's always, you know, he'll blame the people in Washington or he'll blame, you know, the president's advisors instead of blaming the president himself. Similar to the way Senator Graham handles this, similar to the way Senator Scott handles this, when they have criticisms about the president, they want to do it in a very delicate way. They want to state their position. They certainly don't want to make it a personal gripe with the president. So I think that it was interesting the way the Governor McMaster framed that. He really staked his position on it, but he did it in such a way that it's not going to rankle anyone in the White House.
So a little bit of a little look here about how the delicate dance works both in Washington and in South Carolina with Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier. Jamie, thank you so much for breaking this down for us this week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Giddy up, partner, for another trip down the dusty campaign trail, where we keep you up to date on state and local campaign news. This week's campaign notebook looks at a recent article in Governing Magazine, yes, the magazine exists, which found that so-called replacement governors themselves often get replaced. It mentioned that three governors will be running for office this year after filling in for their predecessors. Like McMaster in South Carolina, the current governors of Iowa and Kansas have their jobs because their predecessors were appointed to ambassadorships as well. It's an uphill battle for all the replacements, and there is no guarantee that those interim successors will become permanent after the primaries. However, McMaster has a bit more working in his favor than the other two replacements do. He has name recognition. He's been involved in state politics for more than 30 years, continues to lead in polls, and is ahead in the fundraising game. Also, last week's State of the State didn't hurt getting his name out there either, though it wasn't officially a campaign speech. Still, as the political season continues, the big takeaway is there is no free ride on the campaign trail. In our final section called Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers used when speaking to each other. Now, South Carolina takes its flora seriously. Our state flower, the yellow jessamine, our wildflower, the goldenrod. We even have state grass, which is Indian grass. And of course, we all know the sable palm is our tree. But which version of the tree? Look close enough at a few state flags, and you'll see different versions of the palmetto. That's because manufacturers use their own designs of the tree. Now, one Senate bill would mandate a uniform depiction of the tree on state flags. It's working its way through the committee process right now in the Senate, but like versions of the tree, there are many opinions on the matter as well. While South Carolina's flag is beautiful, depending on which one you look at, the majesty of my home state's flag of Maryland is consistently stunning, though some of you have called it the ugliest flag in America. Well, no crab cakes or natty bow for you, haters. Follow this bill, S-559, on scstatehouse.gov. South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to keep you informed. Watch my Statehouse video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook page, YouTube, and my Twitter at Gavin Jackson. Read the Statehouse Daybook on SCETV.org and listen to coverage on South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy to use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to the South Carolina Lead. And we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts. Email your questions, comments, or your gripes to sclead@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Our executive producers are Tom Posey and Russ McKinney. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on January 29th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening, and let's keep it PG this Super Bowl Sunday, Justin Timberlake.